tribulation, but I know God. Satan wanna put me in a bow tie. Pray that the holy water don't go dry.
In the Earl Ingram Show, as always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, what Dave was talking about, and then we'll move on. Yes, there's so many different things, and you and I have been talking about this, seems like forever, where our nation has failed to plan in so many different areas.
Different, I think, than not planning, because I think what's happening is there's a direct assault on the competence of government, and there's the strangulation. It started with Grover Norquist in the Reagan period before that, where there's this direct assault on government where it's kind of purposefully done to remove funding and make it less able for make government less able to deliver its service well. So they've done that in OSHA areas. They've done that in EPA areas. There's been this assault.
FDA.
And so now, but the savings of money that has occurred has been sort of across the board. FAA. The FAA was sort of incompetent in the way they were dealing with the Dreamliner with Boeing. The FDA has had problems with respect to its performance and how competent it's been. This FAA failure is clearly a demonstration, at least, of a failure of infrastructure. And that failure suggests that were there to be a willful attack, essentially by outsiders, to try and hobble our transportation system through hacking, that it would be apparently achievable, you know, because it only took the failure of a couple of systems at the FAA to ground all of our airplanes.
You know, Sandy, the bridges, and I've gone under enough bridges and look at them and say, wow, man, when are we, and even before Biden came up with the infrastructure package, you see them crumbling before your eyes. And sometimes I'm hesitant to go under those things, although I don't have any other way, because you see, when they built these things, you got to give them credit. The people who put those things together and built them, even with as sturdy as they are, nothing's made to last forever.
Well, the resistance on taxes even goes to local, and lots of localities are having trouble with their infrastructure with water mains and water lines,
right,
and sewers and sewer systems and water treatment systems. All of this stuff has, Americans have gotten
shelf life.
But we've gotten to the point where we are, we're like the landlord who decides to pocket the rent instead of maintaining the building, and then runs into some massive catch-up kinds of replacement costs instead of mere maintenance costs. You know, you have to replace the whole top of the building instead of just the roof, because you weren't taking care of the roof. It leaked. It all rotted. You know, deferred maintenance ends up being a big problem, and America has been deferring maintenance on many, many parts of its system, and primarily because of the deprivation of adequate revenue, tax revenue, to carry out their functions.
A prime example is Milwaukee County Parks. And as beautiful as they still are and have been, we've got to try to get this stuff taken care of while we're still here.
Well, you remember that the Bradley building was torn down because they went in and inspected it and decided they had $90 million worth of deferred maintenance to do. The domes are in the process of being considered for being torn down because of deferred maintenance that wasn't done on the domes. And now the repair of it is going to be so substantially expensive that they're saying, wow, it's not worth it. There's plenty of examples of this. And so I think the wake-up call here is that this notion of simply being against spending money is foolish in the face of the need to be able to deliver competent government service. In fact, competent government service is usually more efficient than incompetent government service. That driving us in the direction of good business practices for our government is going to be a more efficient sort of government that actually delivers what it needs to deliver. You know, we had trouble distributing the checks that were going to go out for the, you know, during the Trump administration. They were going to deliver checks to everyone to stimulate the economy, and they had trouble just going through that process.
You know, they're having trouble in Milwaukee delivering mail, getting people, enough people to deal with it. The systems are breaking down, and we can't. These are all things, as you stated, that we've got to address and address now. You can't push it off any further on the back burner because it's in the condition it's in, as you stated, because we've been pushing it.
Well, and I just think that this all came up because we were talking about the assault on government of taking money away from the IRS, which is sort of a most fundamental kind of way to tee that issue up. But, you know, I would hope that the business people of America, many of whom are probably self-declared Republicans, would take the position that our government ought to run as competently as our businesses, and that it is not wise to simply strangle the government of the capacity to conduct its business.
Do you think, Sandy, that sometimes we look at the government as the enemy and— because in many instances, we act as though we don't need the government individually, but we sometimes don't realize all the different things that government does that makes our life better.
Well, ever since Ronald Reagan's, and obviously he was not the originator of this notion, but he was the one who manifestly presented it. It was, you know, Washington is the problem, it's not the solution. And then Grover Norquist, who was all about basically strangling government of taxes. And so, yes, I do think that there is a strong political movement in which basically the principle is that government is the enemy. Government's the problem. We need to take money away from the government. We need to make it as small as possible. We don't need competent government. In fact, we're better off with incompetent government that can't collect taxes or can't do what else it's supposed to do.
All right, so let's go here. Joe Biden and his papers.
Yeah.
Now, there's this continued debate that Democrats have shown hypocrisy in not handling this the same way that they've handled Donald Trump and what happened with him.
Well, you know, actually, now as of today, they are handling it the same way. They've appointed a special counsel. It's a special counsel that was a U.S. attorney appointed by Trump to investigate this. So the investigation. I would say this though, and I was struck by the news media coverage, and I know that a substantial number of conservatives take the view that the news media is inherently liberal and runs against. Them. And I will say that I think the news coverage of this suggests a bias on the part of the news, because instead of simply reporting that they found all the documents, the news before the Biden administration even came out with any sort of defense associated with explaining about the documents, the news media presented the theoretical defense for it that it's a different situation. It's a much more limited number of documents. The Biden administration has done this voluntarily. They didn't resist providing the documents to the Justice Department when asked, et cetera, et cetera. All of that is true. But the flavor of it, I think, does a disservice because it sort of plays into the hands of the conservatives who want to point at the news media and say, see how they covered this? They're making the case on behalf of Biden, and when it happened to Trump, they made the case against Trump every time they covered it in the news. And some of that's true because, I think the news media does tend to beat the drum in whatever direction they think will be found most satisfactory by their readers. And so I simply think that the news media does itself a disservice and actually does a disservice to the Biden administration by not simply handling this in the most straightforward way possible.
You know, as you stated, Merrick Garland has appointed special counsel.
Right.
And even though Republicans were requesting that, they certainly didn't hesitate to do it. Now, you know, I don't know what those documents were. I don't know what they said. And, you know, I, from what I hear from Republican talk radio is that the difference here is that Joe Biden didn't have the authority as a vice president to move any documents. I mean, it's ridiculous. And yet, you know, Donald Trump did. That's not a way to approach.
Well, I mean, I think it's clear that the politicians themselves will develop cases and they'll develop arguments that are on their side or the other side. And I think the news media needs to cover whatever it is that's being said by these folks. And to the extent that the Biden administration has a defense that they want to present, the news media should cover it. My only point was, I think the news media should not spontaneously do these things because it plays into the hands of the people who want to point at it and say, see, it's biased. And I think that one of the problems we have today is that we've lost trusted news media sources because people on either side can point at it and say it's biased. We can point at Fox News and say it's biased, and it undoubtedly is, and it presents news in a biased fashion. With respect to the situation itself, we don't know what's in the papers. It's going to play itself out. The special counsel's been appointed, and sort of end of story until some more facts play out in it.
All right, got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Show as always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. Let's go to CJ. CJ, good morning.
Earl and Sandy. It's Civics Radio Truth Detector, CJ. The mere fact that this was buried and kept quiet since November 2nd proves that this has not been treated the same as Trump's investigation as Sandy wants to claim. The mere fact that the FBI, the archives, knew of this was buried. It was hush-hush, no leaks, and it planned to be until James Comer, the congressman, said he's going to investigate the archives. So Garland knew that this was going to be found out because the Republicans are coming for the truth. And the mere fact that Garland knew that the Republicans were going to find out about this, he had to appoint a special counsel. He had no plans to. But James Comer said Sunday night on the number one news network and the number one
Fox News
show.
Fox News, you mean, right?
Yeah, for 25 years, Earl.
And Sean Hannity.
For 25 years.
Oh, okay.
James Comer was on Mark Levin's show, the number one news show on the weekend. You might want to watch it.
I know Comer well about Mark Levin.
Yeah, I'm sure you don't, because he's a truth detector too.
Man, I know about Mark Levin. Everything
yeah,
is to know
great.
About him.
He's great.
Okay.
He's wonderful, isn't he?
Yeah, well,
he's amazing.
It just,
actually, What he actually researches stuff.
What it does.
He actually researches.
CJ, what it does is it corroborates what I always thought about you, that you were disciples of Mark Levin and
yep.
Okay.
Truth detector.
All right. So is that it?
No, I want to hear Sandy's response about it being buried before the election January 2nd. How about that?
Actually, CJ, I don't quite understand your pointing at me about this. The context I put this in was I thought that the news media had done a disservice by handling it in a manner that was different than and essentially reflected bias. That was a disservice to the public because it essentially suggested a different handling of it. As to the timing and all these facts you described, I have no firsthand knowledge of any of them. All I said was that as of day before yesterday, when a special counsel was appointed, and incidentally, the special counsel that was appointed vis-a-vis Trump took a long time to get appointed as well. That this special appointment had occurred and that it was now going to be investigated in the same manner that the Trump situation was being investigated. I think to the extent that there's a difference in the way it's been handled, most of it reflects news media coverage and the extent to which the news media has been fascinated with one or the other. But in any case, I don't quite understand being so fired up about me and the assertions I've made and the notion of whether or not I need a truth finder. I'm not sure that you and I, CJ, disagree that much. I do think the news media in this particular circumstance is doing a disservice to everyone, including the Biden administration, by handling it in a manner that seemed to be different. So that's all I have to say about it.
Let's give him one last shot at it, Connor.
Jay handled it.
What?
Sandy, you never referred to how the DOJ has handled it.
Well, I did because I don't know how they've handled it.
Neither does he.
And I don't know the facts. I don't know the underlying facts. Various people assert that they do.
But it didn't matter to you about the Trump administration. It didn't matter. He was guilty. Listen to the way Earl talks about it. Okay. Listen to the way you talk about it. Handle it differently.
Let me say this to you, CJ. What Trump was accused of and all the documents they were able to get their hands on, the FBI had to come and go through all of those documents. They knew what documents were missing. And the fact that Donald Trump refused to give them to him, that's a major difference. Whether you or anybody else thinks that it's not, it's a major difference. And so they had to threaten Donald Trump and send in people to force their way to get the documents back. That is a difference between, and whether you believe it or not, doesn't matter. It's just a fact. There's a difference. Now, whether or not Joe Biden and what happened with those documents that he has or had, we'll see. We'll soon see. But that doesn't absolve Sandy Donald Trump for what he did, does it?
No, but I mean, I don't think I've ever been wanting to jump on a bandwagon about whether something that was done was unlawful or not until the investigation's done and until they find out. You know, I think I was just as reserved about the Donald Trump situation as I am about this one, because that's the way I react to things that I don't know about. And I don't know what was in the documents, and I don't think the public does, because they're secret documents with respect to the ones that Trump has, as well as the ones that Biden has. And so I don't know what bandwagon you think that I was on, but I've never been on that. And I guess my view is that all of these things would be best reserved for the process that they're undergoing.
All right, we got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. The Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. It means Fridays with Sandy Williams. And Sandy, Ukraine. It's, you know, are things just ramping up even more? The fact that we're now bringing troops, Ukrainian troops, into this nation, into our country to be trained to operate these Patriot systems and others. Do you think that changes in the mind of Russia, changes, and this is an escalation in some way, shape, or form in their minds?
Well, it could be. We have been training, and we had been training Ukrainians in this country and in Ukraine on military maneuvers and military procedures, both before February 24th last year and after. So we've been doing this. But now we're doing this on a bigger basis because there's more training involved, apparently, with the Patriot missiles and how you operate the Patriot missiles in an integrated military movement kind of a thing. So this does constitute a larger scale of training. You know, what Russia will view as an escalation is, I think, depends. And it really depends probably on how things are going on the battlefield for Russia.
Well, we know they're not going well.
Well, they aren't going well, but I think they're going maybe the way war goes, you know, which is when you get into a war like this, where there is, in fact, effective and organized resistance, like Ukraine is putting up, you end up with a war that doesn't happen overnight. It's not a blitzkrieg. It ends up being an actual extended war. And the thing I've been concerned about is that Russia does have the wherewithal, at least, whether it has the will, it definitely has the wherewithal to fight an extended war and to win it. Its logistical problems are less than ours in terms of keeping themselves armed. The sanctions have made it somewhat more difficult for them to rebuild their armaments. And I think what we've created is something closer to equal in the combatants as between Russia and Ukraine. But if you have equal combatants who both have a will, you can end up with a very long and extended war with many losses. Ukraine has suffered many losses in the Donbas region. Russia has suffered many losses. Both of them are apparently still at it and are committed to the combat. And so, and as I've said before, I am concerned that if Ukraine shifts its gears towards Crimea and Sevastopol, which they have periodically suggested they might do, we could find Russia's reaction to that to be very extreme. And I'm not saying extreme in terms of their reaction towards the NATO nations in terms of extending the war there, but I think it could be much more extreme in terms of the way they carry out the combat. You know, it might become much more like what has been happening in the regions of the Donbas right now, where the war is ongoing, where it's turned into complete ruination. You know, there's been extended shelling, extended artillery, and it is essentially reduced to rubble.
You know, Sandy, you kind of pointed this out going back 7-8 months ago, that you can't discern who's telling the truth about what's happening day to day on the battlefield. Remember, you.
Oh yeah.
You clearly said they're going to fabricate both sides.
Well, like I said, the day war starts, truth ends, and that's been the case always. That both sides in a combat have their own version, which is basically propaganda designed to discourage the other side about what it is that's happening.
So here we are, and I think a lot of us, especially the American citizens, underestimate, even though Russia's really, this has been a battle that they never expected to this degree, that we underestimate who they really are as far as their military, because it's not like they're fighting in America where they got to come across the ocean.
Right.
And they're right On a landmass.
Well, and the other thing is that at least there are those who believe, and apparently Putin has believed, that this war is an existential matter. It isn't. This is not a territorial kind of building of an empire as much as it is something that they believe that Ukraine, being its historic neighbor, being an historic part of the empire that has been Russia since the Romanovs. I think there's a view that for Russia, Ukraine and its independence from NATO is an existential matter. If it's an existential matter, they are willing to go to war about it for a very long time, just as we would if we believed that the existence of the United States was being put at risk, as we did in Cuba, and as we would undoubtedly do in some other circumstances. So if that's the view that Russia has of this, first of all, our behavior with respect to inviting Ukraine into NATO before the conflict started was at least thumbing our nose at that view that Russia had. And then if Russia, it does in fact have that view and holds that view, then their willingness to conduct this war over a long period of time should not be discounted.
You know, Sandy, this article in Newsweek, former Soviet Union countries are our territory, Russian academic says. Don't lose sight that these were our territories at one point in time. I guess that doesn't justify the fact that ended for a while, but they've never forgotten that these were our territories, and probably Sandy had always romanticized about getting those territories back. And at the same time, we have, on the other side of that, not wanted them to get those territories back.
Well, I think we were somehow sort of titillated by the notion of having NATO expand into all of those republics that had exited the Soviet Union and to isolate Russia in the fashion of spreading NATO to these various locales like Ukraine. And of course, we have done it with respect to Estonia, Lithuania. The situation for Russia looks much different than the way we view it. And it's to some extent, the behavior we've had with respect to expanding NATO has created a self-fulfilling prophecy of threatening Russia to the point where apparently they felt compelled to attack Ukraine, which, of course, in retrospect, we can look at it and say, see, we needed to have NATO because Russia was going to attack Ukraine. But that ignores the proposition that in all likelihood, Russia attacked Ukraine because we were essentially talking to Ukraine about becoming a part of the EU and part of NATO, which Russia found very threatening.
So Sandy, so that having been the case, Russia is not ever going to give up the belief that those are once their territories, and that they still romanticize about bringing it all back together.
Well, romanticize is to probably diminish, in fact, how they think. I think their thinking is that
survival.
Survival, that it's existential, that it's right. It's the way we felt when Russia was putting missiles in Cuba, okay? They weren't attacking the United States, but they were creating this capacity to have missiles 90 miles offshore, which we found to be very threatening because those missiles would get to the United States in a nanosecond, and we would not be subject to being able to defend them in a manner. So, Russia has the same issue with respect to missiles in Ukraine, right? They're right there, 200 miles from Moscow. They're there in a nanosecond, and so we have to understand how different nations look at different situations, look at it differently than we look at those same situations. And we also have to probably project and say, how would we look at that situation? Where were the shoe on the other foot? But, you know, none of this sanctifies an invasion of another country. Quite frankly, the placing of missiles in Cuba would not have sanctified our use of missiles to fire at Russia preemptively in that circumstance either, because, you know, we weren't in fact, being invaded in that circumstance. And so the under international law, we really didn't have a justification, wouldn't have had a justification for doing what the sword rattling that we were doing. International affairs doesn't really operate under rules. It operates under tacit kinds of understandings of power and counterpower. And quite frankly, I think that what's happening in Ukraine right now is the result of miscalculations about those factors. And we do have Russia then violating international law by carrying out the invasion. That doesn't really go all the way to the point of explaining why it happened and what the proper outcome is. But my point about the willingness of Russia to conduct this war for a long time is really, I think they'll conduct it as long as their government remains in place and they don't end up with a vacuum. I think there are some who look at Russia and view there a danger that if this war were to exhaust his support in Russia such that he would no longer be a viable autocrat of Russia, there would be a vacuum. And I think some people are just as frightened of what that vacuum would look like as they are of how Putin is behaving now. We have no idea who would replace Putin in the circumstance of a vacuum.
So the Russian people, we don't hear a lot from them as far as whether or not they're in support of their government. More times than not, they are. They're going to be in support of their government more so than they are opposed to it, especially in the communist environment.
I think our CIA, and I think that there has been polling done that's trusted. I think the fact is that the Russian people were substantially in support of what Putin is doing, and that they are substantially in support of Putin. I think that his call-up of the reserves eroded some of that. There were maybe 300 or 350,000 young men who left Russia so they could avoid the call-up. And all of that obviously has a detrimental effect on support in the country. But I think it's a pipe dream for the United States to think, and it should definitely not be a part of our foreign policy, that it's the job of the United States to carry out a foreign policy that will unravel the Putin administration and cause him to be replaced.
You know though, Sandy, it is to me just watching it, not just from the perspective of an American, but from the perspective of, you know, the fact that we keep making this commitment. We've made a commitment, and we're not going to turn around, and we're going to continue to escalate it because we're moving step by step by step, Sandy, to our entanglement in this that we can't get out. You know, early on, we weren't going to send the tanks and those kind of things, and we weren't going to send the planes, and we weren't going to do this, and we weren't going to send the Patriots. We weren't going to do any of those things. Guess what, Sandy? We have.
Yeah.
And we keep moving more and more and more into us being involved.
Well, I think we have not sent planes. And I think what we have avoided doing is sending weapons that have the reach to extend into Russia to any substantial degree to cause damage to the Russia homeland.
And the Russian people.
And I think that's the red line we seem to have drawn and have abided by.
Listen, we've got to go to a break. Jacob, I see you. We'll come to you after the break. 844-967-2789 is the number. We'll be right back. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Fridays with Sandy Williams. Let's go to the phone lines. And Jacob, Hey, Jacob, what's going on? You say what?
Hey, I've got to respond to these right-wing callers who cannot stop talking about how sorry everyone should feel for Donald Trump, because Trump is so mistreated. He's such a nice guy. He's never done anything wrong in his life. You know, he took those thousands of top secret documents home with him, you know, just by accident, right? You know, they wanted Joe Biden to be impeached, but Donald Trump, they had no problem with that at all. Donald Trump just, you know, don't even ask any questions of our you know, cult leader, of our wannabe dictator. You know, these guys like CJ want to brag about Fox News being the number one rated news network. First of all, it's not news. It's propaganda. Second, just because they have every idiot in America watching their TV shows there on Fox News doesn't make it a credible source of information. When guys like CJ want to bring up Fox News as their credible source of, you know, why Joe Biden should be impeached and why Donald Trump is completely innocent and, oh, he's the most persecuted man in American history, give us a break. Most Americans aren't nearly as stupid as CJ.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. Really appreciate it. You know, Sandy, this continued battle. You think we're entering into? Is it safe to say we're entering into a time where the negotiations should begin? Early stages.
Yeah, I mean, my view is that there undoubtedly are back channel negotiations ongoing. That those usually happen relatively soon after a conflict starts. And I think the difficulty is that Americans, I was listening to your show yesterday, and Joel McNally, an old friend of mine, but I heard in him the enthusiasm of an old cold warrior about the notion that we were supporting Ukraine and that Ukraine deserved our support and that they were fighting the good fight against Russia and we should hang in there and that they were going to win the war, et cetera. And I'm afraid that all of that thought process we have, number one, is colored by our view of the Cold War, and two, it's colored by the notion that somehow we should help Ukraine reduce itself to rubble in a contest with Russia in which the outcome undoubtedly is going to involve something that looks very much like the outcome that would have occurred without that war occurring if they had carried out negotiations before the invasion. I mean, I think the one way it will change is that I don't think the Zelensky government's going to have to step down, but I think that all the parties are going to agree that Ukraine won't join NATO. I think that Crimea and Sevastopol will be recognized as being part of Russia after the 2014 accession of that by Russia. And then I think the issue will be exactly what part of the Donbass is treated differently than the rest of Ukraine and what happens there, which is what was at issue before the invasion.
So let me ask you, Sandy, is this a precedent now with our nation that, let's say, Taiwan and China, that, you know, this is what we'll do. We'll militarily supply, these types of nations. And
well, if the problem there is that we will have to militarily supply Taiwan, not with weapons, but a huge inventory of weapons, because if there were to be a war with China, China will very successfully blockade this island of Taiwan and make it impossible for supplies to be brought into Taiwan from outside of Taiwan. So it is an absolutely untenable in the long term. If there were to be a battle over Taiwan with China, it's an untenable kind of a situation unless we were willing to attack mainland China or to otherwise change the field of battle from simply Taiwan. And our long-term foreign policy over the past period wouldn't support and wouldn't be consistent with us actually going to war over Taiwan. We've talked about helping Taiwan, about supplying Taiwan, but that proxy war would not last very long. It wouldn't have anything like the duration that we currently have ongoing with Ukraine.
You know, Sandy, when you hear many Republicans who are basically saying we shouldn't be there, which is surprising to me.
That we shouldn't be where?
Supporting Ukraine.
Yeah.
That's a surprise to me. I don't know what their rationale is from that perspective, because, you know, they think that it's financially we're spending money that could be better used. What is their thought process?
Well, I don't necessarily disagree with them very much. I think that the situation in Ukraine wouldn't have to be what it is if we had not behaved as we did over the period beginning in 2012 and proceeding forward to 2022. And I think a number of actions that we took resulted in reactions, which ultimately resulted in the invasion. And then the approach of simply deciding that because there's a war there, we're going to throw as much munitions and money into it on the side of Ukraine as they want or need is without analyzing the situation. And my analysis of the situation is that the outcome is not going to justify the notion that we're going to expend all of that national treasure, help Ukraine be reduced to rubble, and have an outcome that is not really altogether different than the outcome that could be achieved at any moment in time.
So let me ask you, the fact that it's certain aspects of it have been reduced to rubble, with the kind of debt our nation is carrying, how are we then going to be able to financially support the rebuilding?
Well, I mean, the problem with warfare is that the costs of it are so much larger than the cost of each day at war. There is the aftermath of the war. There's the cost, you know, when we are actual participants in war, there's the cost of our veterans. There's the cost of the dislocations that occur. In this particular case, we have the costs associated with the inflation that arose, the recession in Europe, the general economic issues. But we will also have a rebuilding problem for Ukraine, which, quite frankly, can't be done easily be done on a charitable basis. I mean, its cost is probably a mountain compared to the $100 billion or so that we've invested there already. So there's a mountain of cost, and the country will not be its infrastructure will be so damaged, and its economy will be so damaged that post-war it will be limping badly. So I'm just saying that we need to look at warfare in a much bigger sense.
All right, listen, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Friday. It means Fridays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.